Numbers 25 is where we left off. Numbers 25. Now, if you remember, we have been following the Israelites out of Egypt. 600,000 fighting men, plus women and children strong. And they came, got the law at Sinai, went to the promised land, were asked to go in, chose not to out of fear. And so they get to spend 38 years wandering in the desert. Now they're on the outside of the promised land. They've defeated a couple nations that came up against them. You remember last time we had finished talking about Moab, who was very afraid of them because Moab had been beaten by the Ammonites. And so the Moabites, the Moabites saw the Ammonites get beat up by the Israelites and realized they were in real trouble. So they tried to hire somebody to curse them. Balak was the king, and he hired Balaam. And he tried, except for the Lord wouldn't let him do it. And then finally, at the end of it, and we kind of went over this at the end of last Thursday night, what he did do, which is clear when you look at the other sections in the Bible that talk about it, was he told Balak, Balaam told Balak, look, I can't curse them directly because they're blessed by God. However, there is a way if you really want to get them. They are under God's protection. However, if you take your pretty young ladies and you march them down next to the camp, then the men of Israel will see the ladies and they'll go fornicate with them. And then your ladies can haul them off to partake in worshiping your pagan gods. And you won't have to beat them. God will do it for you because he will correct his children. And they can get out from underneath his protection by sinning with your ladies. So Balak did that. And of course the Israelites did that. And we read last time about a plague that struck them. And finally it got to the point where people were dying. In fact, it says 23,000 in one day, total 24,000 of the Israelites died. And you remember one guy, Zimri? He brought Cosby, a Moabitess woman, into a tent right in front of Moses and Joshua and Phinehas and Eleazar, the high priest, and Phinehas was so incensed that he would do that, that he went and grabbed a spear and pinned him through. One blow took out both of them in one shot and stayed the plague. And that's where we left last week around verse 9. Those that died in the plague were 24,000. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying in verse 11 of chapter 25 of Numbers, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, has turned my wrath away from the children of Israel, while he was zealous for my sake among them, that I consume not the children of Israel in my jealousy. Because God is, he says he's a jealous God. He looks at his relationship with us as a marital relationship. Israel was the bride of Jehovah. In the New Testament, Jesus Christ is the bride of Christ, is the church, and we are his bride. And when we put other things in his place, he looks at us as being unfaithful. And the Lord was jealous of that. He says, wherefore say, behold, I give unto him my covenant of peace, and he shall have it and his seed after him, even the covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his God and made an atonement for the children of Israel. Now the name of the Israelite that was slain, even that was slain with the Midianitish woman, was Zimri, the son of Salu, a prince of a chief house among the Simeonites. And the name of the Midianitish woman was Cosby, daughter of Zur. He was head over a people in a chief house in Midian. And we pick up in verse 16, it says, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, vex the Midianites and smite them, for they vex you with their wiles, wherewith they have beguiled you in the matter of Peor and in the matter of Cosby, the daughter of a prince of Midian, their sister, which was slain in the day of the plague for Peor's sake. And he said, you know, vex them, crush them, hit them. And it's interesting because we looked at this last week from the perspective of the New Testament, of our perspective of as believers, there is still that struggle that goes on after you've been saved. You know, you'd like to think that you ask Christ into your heart and then all of a sudden all your problems are over and all your cares go away and you never struggle anymore. But unfortunately, we know that's not the case. Or if you are saved, you've learned that very quickly on that, you know what, there's still that traitor within. That old person doesn't want to die. And you're lashed to them until you either die or we're taken out of here by the Lord. And there's that battle that goes on. And we talked about that, about how you need to put reckon the old man dead. Well, here's the Lord telling them specifically, if Midian is a type of that, the people who are vexing them, vex them back, smite them. You know, and it made me think about what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24. Remember, he was talking, Paul, the sporting fan that he is, he's always talking about the fight or the race. Well, here he says in 1 Corinthians 9, 24, know you not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that you may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body, and I bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. And Paul talked about, you know, that about beating his body into submission, about denying himself and not feeding the things that would, in his life, that would cause that old man to have too strong of a hold on him. And I think in some ways you look at what the Lord was telling them to do with the Midianites, kind of speaks to that, about us keeping our bodies under, about us keeping ourselves pure, trying to keep away from the things that will drag us down. So we come to Numbers chapter 26, and we learn why this is called the book of Numbers once again, because it says, and it came to pass after the plague that the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, because remember, Aaron has died at this point, so Eleazar is now the high priest, saying, take the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel, from 20 years old and upward, throughout their father's house, all that are able to go to war in Israel. And Moses and Eleazar the priest spake with them in the plains of Moab by Jordan, near Jericho, saying, take the sum of the people from 20 years old and upward, as the Lord commanded Moses and the children of Israel, which went forth out of the land of Egypt. So when we started the book of Numbers in chapter 1, they went through and they numbered all of the people to see how many came out. And you remember that they went in as, was it 70 or 75 souls that went down into Egypt. They were there for 400 years, and they went from being a family of 75 people to being a group coming out when they were counted that was over 600,000 fighting men plus women and children, you know, probably 2 to 3 million people coming out. And they went by the tribes, and again, as a refresher, the Jewish people, the Israelites, were the descendant of Abraham through Isaac, his son, through Isaac's son, Jacob. And Jacob had 12 sons, and there were the 12 tribes. And so when they talk about the tribe of this or the family of that, it's just the lineage based upon the 12 sons of Jacob. And look, this is pretty long, and some of these names are pretty difficult, so I'm going to blow through some of it. But there is some significance, and I'll point out a few things as we go. Verse 5, he starts out with the eldest. Reuben, the eldest son of Israel, children of Reuben, Hanok, and Palu. Of Hezron, in verse 6, the Hezronites. Of Carmi, the family of the Carmonites. And it says in verse 7, these are the families of the Reubenites that were numbered with them, 40,730. So Reuben, at the end of this 38-year period, they're at 43,730. Now, they started at 46,500, so they've decreased slightly, Reuben's family, over the last 38 years. As we continue to go down through that, verse 9, it mentions this is the sons of Eliab, Nemuel, and Dathan and Abiram. This is that Dathan and Abiram, which were famous in the congregation, who strove against Moses and against Aaron and the company of Korah when they strove against the Lord. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up together with Korah when that company died. What time the fire devoured 250 men and they became a sign. You know, I don't want to go out that way. I personally, part of, for me, going through life at this point is, you know, oh Lord, help me not to screw up so bad that I become, you know, the one that I'm famous in the congregation for how stupid I was and how finally, you know, God had to swallow me up because I blew it so bad. But Dathan, Abiram, and Korah got that title. Although verse 11, remember, it said, notwithstanding the children of Korah died not. They stepped away from their dad, let him get swallowed, and they remained alive. And as we mentioned, we went through that section later on, they become the worship leaders because many of the sons are written to the sons of Korah. So there is redemption, certainly. Verse 12, sons of Simeon. And he lists, well, the families of Nemuel, of Jamin. They must have been the worship leaders too, because they were Jamin. Zerah in verse 13, verse 14. These are the families of the Simeonites, 22,200. Now, Simeon, when they started, when they were counted at the first part of Numbers, they were 59,300, which means they lost 37,000 people. Over 62% of the Simeonites died in the wilderness. And, you know, you wonder why that is, and you don't know exactly, although we do know that the guy we just mentioned, in who was with Cosby, the Moabitess, who was killed by Phinehas with the javelin, was of the tribe of Simeon, and it could be that it was not just him, but it was by and large his family that fell into that sin. And so when you saw 23 or 24,000 of them die in the plague, very well could have been it was many of them were Simeonites. We don't know, but whatever the case, at this point they declined dramatically over the last 38 years. Verse 15, the children of Gad, and it tells us down in verse 18 that they were counted up, and there were 40,500 of them, which is down from 45,650. Verse 19, sons of Judah were Ur and Onan. And Ur and Onan died in the land of Canaan. And again, that's in Genesis chapter 38, Onan the barbarian. And if you remember that story, that's the one that's always used to try to say that God hates people who practice birth control. But that's not what it means at all. But interesting anyways, it's Genesis 38 if you want to track it down later. The sons of Judah after their families, and it gives his descendants. And if you jump down to verse 22, it said, and the number of Judah was 76,500. Judah stayed pretty close to the same, rose a little bit more than before. After that comes the sons of Issachar and their families. And list them out. Verse 25, it says that Issachar had 64,300. They increased by almost 10,000 men in the 38 years. In verse 26, it talks about the sons of Zebulun and their families. And it says that they were numbered 60,500. Or if you like King James, 70,500 in verse 27. And they also increased a little bit. The sons of Joseph, after their families, were Manasseh and Ephraim. And remember, these were the two. Joseph, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, went into the land and had two sons in Egypt. And they were adopted by Jacob, his father. So that many times when it talks about the 12 tribes, there really were 13. And sometimes they'll count them separately. Ephraim becomes a tribe, Manasseh counts a tribe, especially when they want to leave out Levi, because Levi is, like when they count the men of war, they're going to count these two tribes separately and leave Levi out, because Levi is, the priests, and they did not go to war. Other times they'll count them together and call them Joseph if they want to include Levi for a different purpose. So here we have Manasseh and Ephraim, and then it goes into Manasseh first in verse 29. It lists lists the descendants of Manasseh. Interesting, in verse 33, it says, and Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, had no sons but daughters. And the names of the daughters of Zelophehad were Mahlah and Noah and Hogla. Who would name their poor daughter Hogla? Tell me that girl didn't get picked on growing up. Milcah and Tirzah. And we're going to see that we're going to talk about them some more in the next chapter, because they get some significant ink in the book of Numbers. But he had no sons. And all of the family of Manasseh that were counted up, it says, were 52,700. They had the largest increase. They were 32,200 when they started, so they increased by 63%. And then the sons of Ephraim after their families. Ephraim. And it lists his family in verse 37. The sons of Ephraim were 32,500. They had a slight decrease. And then after that, Benjamin, after their families. And he lists the various ones from Benjamin. And when you get down to verse 41, it talks about the sons of Benjamin. And they were numbered more 45,600. So Benjamin, and he went up also about 10,000 men. In verse 42, Dan. And verse 43 gives the count for the tribe of Dan, and they were 64,400. They increased slightly. Then you come to Asher in verse 44, and in verse 47 it gives the total for Asher, 53,400 men, which is about almost 12,000. They went up considerably too. The sons of Naphtali in verse 48, which includes the family of the Jaziel and of Guni, the family of the Gunites. That would be Alan's tribe, the Gunites. And of Jezer and the rest. And it gives the count of Naphtali, 45,400. And they decreased by about 8,000. And then it sums it all up in verse 51. And it says, these were numbered of the children of Israel, 600,730. Or 601,730. Now, the interesting thing about that, and again, you look at that and you think, okay, I just read a whole bunch of names that mean nothing to me and a whole bunch of numbers that mean nothing to me. Well, here they are in the 38 years. Well, first of all, when they in the 400 years that they were in captivity, they went from being 75 people to being 2.5 million people. And that's not, if you actually do the math out over the period of time, that's not an astronomical growth rate. It's pretty healthy, but it's not astronomical. But they continued to multiply. And that was under persecution. I mean, they were being, and that was with Pharaoh at one point being so afraid of how prolific they were, killing all the male children and throwing them in the Nile. Yet, in the middle of that, they prospered greatly. Then they get out into the wilderness. Now they're not under persecution anymore. They're brought to the promised land. They're asked to go in. At the beginning, they had 603,550. They didn't go in. They disobeyed when the Lord told them to go into the land because they were afraid. So they went out in the wilderness to die. For 38 years, they wandered around. And they ended up at 601,730, which means they lost about 2,000 people, which for a number that size is basically a 0% population growth. And I don't know about you, but in my life, when I am disobedient to the Lord, I have a 0% growth too, you know. There, it seemed to me a whole bunch of years where I never seemed to get anywhere. You know, I started out and I accepted the Lord and there were some big changes right off the bat, you know. And some of the things I was doing on a regular basis, the hitting the bar and all that, kind of cleaned up fairly soon into it. And then it just sort of got on a plateau. And, you know, there was still a lot of areas that, you know, the stuff that's glaringly obvious right at the beginning of, you know, you need to give that up because that's just way wrong. I mean, that's not even a gray area. That's pitch black area. That's obviously black and white. Okay, yeah, I give that up. But then you get to some of the gray areas where the Holy Spirit would say, well, you need to, why don't you stop watching that and pray? Why don't you stop reading that and read this instead? Or stop listening to that and listen to this instead? Well, the Lord was trying to grow me, and I'm like, yeah, but I really like that. You know, it doesn't hurt anybody, and other people do that, and you know, what's the big deal? I'm not killing anybody, I don't think so. And then you kind of look around and you think, you know, I'm just not really getting anywhere. Other people are getting places, and I see all kinds of stuff in their life. How come I'm not getting anywhere? And then you realize this, because you're still back on square one, you know. You're supposed to do what he said back there. It's not a pass or fail. It's usually pass or repeat. And I spent a bunch of years repeating, you know, before I finally said, okay. And I started doing, and it doesn't mean I always do it right. I still, you know, there's still many cycles in that. But here they were for 38 years because of their disobedience. There was no growth. In fact, Hebrews chapter 3, this is interesting. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 17 is a commentary on this section. And it says this, it says, but with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? Isn't that great? We have carcasses. And to whom swear he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not? So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. It wasn't a lack of hearing the word. I mean, these guys actually heard at one point in Sinai, they heard the Ten Commandments audibly spoken by God, and it freaked them out so bad they begged Moses, just you talk to him, we never want to hear that again. If his 11th commandment, we'll die. Just don't speak anymore loud. You know, we can't stand it. It was too scary. But yet, they heard the word. They had it directly from Moses' mouth, and yet it wasn't mixed with faith. And so they perished in unbelief. You know, and I think so many times, it's not even a lack of hearing, it's a lack of doing. We don't suffer from a lack of hearing. You know, I seemed like there was a period of time before we started having kids and got too busy that I read every marriage book that was out there, every, you know, we went to marriage seminars and marriage counseling and marriage groups and a marriage Bible study and the marriage this and the marriage that. There's only so many times you can hear husbands love your wives. I mean, there's only a handful of verses. It wasn't for lack of hearing them. It was for a lack of doing it that was the problem. And that's really what it comes down to in so many cases. It's not a matter of hearing the word. It's actually applying it. Well, they didn't trust God. They didn't believe God. And certainly, because of that, they perished. And there was no growth. And they wandered for 38 years. And then, and the reason why they're numbered this time, by the way, one is really for the inheritance, because they're going to be coming into the land. They're going to cross over the Jordan. They're going to go towards Jericho. And the land is going to be divided based upon tribe and based upon family. And this is what it says in verse 52. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, unto these the land shall be divided for an inheritance according to the number of names. To many thou shalt give the more inheritance, and to few thou shalt give the less inheritance. To every one shall his inheritance be given according to those that were numbered of him. Notwithstanding, the land shall be divided by lot, according to the names of the tribes of their fathers they shall inherit. According to the lot shall the possession thereof be divided between many and few. And what he's saying is this. Okay, obviously, we're going to divide the land up, and the families that have much larger numbers, I mean, they range anywhere from, my little list here, not that I know these by hand, but Judah, which had 76,500, down to Simeon, which only had 22,200. He's saying, you know, the more there are in the family, the bigger the section of land they're going to get. However, within the land, the various sections that the tribes go to are going to be determined by casting a lot, the holy coin toss. You know, that's the, and of course, that's what's going to happen. They would cast lots to see who was where. But, you know, Proverbs 16:33 tells us the lot is cast into the lap, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. And truth be told, you know, even though they were in their mind through chance, just determining which tribe would be in which section, because they would be contiguous. They would all be in a group, but they would get a certain percentage of the land. It was all directed by the Lord who was where. You know, and when you look at that from our perspective, we got to realize that our lot is from the Lord as well, you know. Because it's real easy sometimes to complain about the lot that you have. I don't know if you've ever looked at your lot and say, I really just got the raw end of the stick in life. And there are some people who do get the raw end of the stick in life. I was, couldn't sleep the other night, and I was flipping around, and on one of the history channels, there was a documentary on Auschwitz and what happened there, and talking to the various people and how, you know, they would bring in Jews by the train loads and you know, we're gassing them and burning. And I can't remember, it was like 1.5 million people died in that place over the course of the war. And, you know, they interviewed different people. One girl she was there, and she was healthy enough that they kept her around to work because somebody had to sort through all the belongings of all the people they brought in. Of course, the people never knew. The ones coming in didn't know they were going to die. They had the gas chambers built like showers, and they would take them in there in sections, get them to strip down off all their clothes and everything, put your possessions over here, tie your shoes together so you can find them again and everything, you know, and then they'd march them in lots, and then they'd gas them, and they'd throw them in the ovens out back, and then they'd go get the next bunch. And the ones who were waiting to go in didn't know what was going on in there. In fact, they would be sitting in this park, they had gardens planted and stuff, and they'd just be kind of sitting around because the Germans knew if a whole trainload of them found out at once what was going on, they'd revolt. And so they kept them happy, and they made it seem like, of course, this lady knew what was going on, but they weren't allowed to say anything or they'd be shot instantly. So she just watched day after day after day as all these people came in and got burned, came in and got killed. And, you know, you think about some of the people who got that lot in life. You look at someone like a Corrie ten Boom, who was in the concentration camp and watched her mother and her sister die. You know, and you ask yourself, is that fair? That's not fair. I don't think that's fair at all. But yet, she took that possession that she had, the lot she was cast. And how many people has she reached? I don't know if you've ever listened to her stuff, but she's been, you know, Lord has used her mightily to talk about forgiveness. She eventually, at one of the things she was going around speaking at, because she got saved, and one of the guards that she was underneath in prison came up to her, and it was the one that killed her sister, I believe, came up to her and said, I'm sorry, I'm a Christian now. Would you please forgive me? And she didn't want to forgive him. She said, my hand shrank and withered. I didn't want to do it. I, you know, but the Lord told her to do it. And as she reached out to forgive, the Lord put a love in her heart. But, I mean, that was a hard lot she was cast. You know, you look at somebody like Johnny Erickson, who's in a wheelchair, or how many Christians do you know? Yet it seems like it's an unpleasant lot. But the truth is, they know the Lord in a way because of where they're at. And you know, I mean, when we get into the study of the land, when they get into the land, some of them are going to end up in the real fertile areas. And we all know believers who seems like everything is just rosy for them, and they live in a garden and everything prospers, and they've got all kinds of money and all kinds of this and all kinds of that and all kinds of stuff that I don't have. And there's other ones that seem like they inherit the desert, and it's dry and it's cold and it's, but it's also peaceful. And you know, when you read through the scriptures, most of the people that hear from God, the men of God like Moses and John the Baptist, even Jesus, they didn't hear from God in the lush, pleasant surroundings. It was when they were in the desert. And, you know, there's, the Lord disposes all of it. Even when you get into Matthew and he talks about the talents, you know, the Lord handpicks particular people for particular places at particular times. And he's got you and he's got me picked for the place that we're in. And the question is, do we trust him with the lot or not? Do we believe that he knows what he's doing? I tend to find myself in the advisor role of God way too frequently. I don't know about you, but he needs my help apparently to let him know, no, Lord, this is how it's supposed to be. But then I wander and I have no growth because I'm not obedient, because the Lord knows exactly where you're at and why you're at where you're at. And the question is, are you listening, you know? So that's how it's going to be divided. And then he goes to the Levites in verse 57, because they weren't counted with the fighting men. These are they that were numbered with the Levites after their families: of Gershon, the family of the Gershonites; of Kohath, the family of the Kohathites; of Merari, the family of the Merarites. That family. These are the families of the Levites, the family of the Libnites, the family of the Hebronites, the family of the Mahalites, the family of the Mushites, the family of the Korathites. And Kohath begat Amram, and the name of Amram's wife was Jochebed, the daughter of Levi, and Hermah, whom her mother bare to Levi in Egypt. And she bare unto Amram Aaron and Moses and Miriam, their sister. You know, in preparing for this, one of the things that Joe Foch pointed out that I thought was really interesting, it probably doesn't interest you, but Moses, we have, you know, you've got Aaron and you've got Miriam and all these other names. Moses is not a Hebrew name. Do you know that? Because his mother, I mean, she obviously, we would assume, named him, but Moses' name was given in Exodus chapter 2, verse 10, by the Egyptian princess who pulled him out of the water, and Moses means to draw out. We don't know what his, I mean, of course, now Moshe, that's the Jewish, the Hebrew form of Moses, that's a good Hebrew name, but it wasn't then, it was an Egyptian one. And it says, and unto Aaron was born Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. And Nadab and Abihu died when they offered strange fire before the Lord. We read that when they got smoked. And those that were numbered of them were 20 and 3,000, all males from a month old and upward. For they were not numbered among the children of Israel because there was no inheritance given to them among the children of Israel. They didn't get a piece of land. Their inheritance, it says, was the Lord. And they actually increased. They went up about 1,000. These are they that were numbered by Moses and Eleazar the priest, who numbered the children of Israel in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho. But among these there was not a man of them whom Moses and Aaron the priest numbered when they numbered the children of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. For the Lord had said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. And there was not left a man of them save Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. It's kind of scary, you know. 603,000 people, men of fighting age, staggered at the promise of God. And now, 38 years later, none of them are left except for two guys. 610,000. I mean, and we did this before. When you went through the numbers, they were burying about 85 people a day. They had to in order to kill off that many men in the 38 years. I don't want to be one of them. Chapter 27. They came the daughters of Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Maker, the son of Manasseh, of the families of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. And these are the names of his daughters: Mahlah, Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. And they stood before Moses and before Eleazar the priest and before the princes and all the congregation by the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, saying, our father died in the wilderness and was not in the company of them that gathered themselves together against the Lord in the company of Korah, but died in his own sin and had no sons. Why should the name of our father be done away from among his family because he has no sons? Give unto us, therefore, a possession among the brethren of our father. And Moses brought their cause before the Lord. What they were saying was this: our dad, Zelophehad, he didn't have any sons. And the land was going to, when they were going to get into the promised land, they weren't in there yet, they were just getting ready to go in. When it was going to be divvied up, it was going to be given to the sons. Well, our dad didn't have any. We want a possession in the land. It's not fair that we shouldn't get one just because our dad had no sons. It wasn't like he was part of the group with Korah that rebelled and were swallowed up. It says, no, he died in his own sin, just like all the rest of them. So we want inheritance. And Moses is like, God, never heard of that one before. Let me go ask God. And it says, the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, the daughters of Zelophehad speak right. Thou shalt surely give them a possession of an inheritance among their father's brethren. And thou shalt cause the inheritance of their father to pass unto them. And thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a man die and have no son, then you shall cause his inheritance to pass unto his daughter. If he have no daughter, then you shall give his inheritance unto his brethren. If he have no brethren, then you shall give his inheritance unto his father's brethren. And if his father have no brethren, then you shall give his inheritance unto his kinsman that is next to him of his family, and he shall possess it. And it shall be unto the children of Israel a statute of judgment, as the Lord commanded Moses. And you know, when you read about that, there's a couple different things there. I mean, it seems strange to make a big deal about this. It's going to talk about it again in Numbers chapter 36. So here you've got a mention in the last chapter. You've got a big section here in Numbers 27, again in Numbers 36, talking about these daughters of Zelophehad. And you look at that, or I look at that, and you think, what's the point? You know, God doesn't write anything in here for no reason. Well, first of all, I find it interesting, the contrast. You know, here you have 603,000 men who died because they did not trust the Lord. They did not believe. And yet here's some ladies, young ladies, they're single ladies, and they stand up and they say to Moses, well, that's all fine and dandy for them, but we want our inheritance in the land. We want the portion of God's inheritance coming to us. You know, and I think that's really cool. You know, if they had been married, then certainly they would have got an inheritance through their husbands through the land. But when a woman is not married, then she needs to be devoted to the Lord. And here's some young ladies who were saying, we didn't, you know, because half the reason why they a lot of them were judged, well, was because they were in fornication with you know, idolatry and all of that. And here's some women who were single, who were pure, and said, no, we want our inheritance. We want a piece of the land, God. We want what you have for us. And the Lord upholding their cause and saying, hey, they're right. They do deserve a place in the land. But beyond that, there's some other cool little things about it. Now, if you look at Numbers chapter 36, and I'll jump ahead for just a second and read you a little piece of that so we understand. Because the land was going to be divided by the families, and the land was an eternal possession. When I, that was my inheritance, I get in the land, I have this particular piece of property. When I die, it goes to my kids. The way the Lord had set up the economy, if I got in financial ruin and I had to sell off the property, it was only rented because the property stayed with the family, so that if someone bought that land, they only had the use of it at most for 50 years until the year of Jubilee, and then all of the land went back to the original owners. So that was my family's inheritance forever, was this land. And what's going to happen is we get to chapter 36, and it's going to say this. The chief fathers of the families of the children of Gilead, the son of Maker, the sons of Manasseh, the family of the sons of Joseph, came near and spake before Moses and before the princes and chief fathers of the children of Israel, and they said, "The Lord commanded my Lord to give the land for an inheritance by lot to the children of Israel. And my Lord was commanded by the Lord to give the inheritance of Zelophehad, our brother, unto his daughters. And if they be married to any of the sons of other tribes of the children of Israel, then shall their inheritance be taken away from the inheritance of our fathers, and shall be put to the inheritance of the tribe whereunto they are received. So shall it be taken from the lot of our inheritance. In the year of Jubilee, the children of Israel shall be their inheritance, be put into the inheritance of the tribe whereunto they are received. So shall their inheritance be taken away from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers." And Moses commanded the children of Israel according to the word of the Lord, saying, "The tribe of the sons of Joseph has said well. This is the thing which the Lord doth command concerning the daughters of Zelophehad, saying, Let them marry to whom they think best. Only to the family of the tribe of their father shall they marry." See, what was going to happen was the other members of that same tribe said, here's the problem. You gave it to some ladies. But if they go and marry somebody else from another tribe, that land is going to belong to their husband at that point, and it's no longer going to be part of our family inheritance. And this was, you know, if this was going to be the area for Judah, and they go and marry some other tribe, then all of a sudden the inheritance gets all messed up. And so Moses says, you're right. They do get this piece of the land, and they can marry whoever they see fit, as long as that person is a member of their own tribe, because they're not going to marry outside, and that way the land will stay within it. Okay, that makes a little bit more sense, but what's the deal? Well, one thing that does, and you know, if you take any of you who know who Chuck Missler is, if you take the Chuck Missler school of what do you do with something that doesn't make any sense in the Old Testament, you throw Jesus Christ in the middle and see where it fits. If you go through the genealogies of Jesus, it's interesting because they're a little different. There's one genealogy in the book of Matthew that runs back and starts with Abraham and goes down to Jesus. Matthew being the book showing that he was the lion of the tribe of Judah, tracing his lineage back to Abraham, which any good Jew would do. And in Matthew chapter 1, verse 16, it talks about Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who was called the Christ. So it talks about Joseph coming from his father was named Jacob, and he marries Mary, and Mary has Jesus. When you get into Luke, and you look at the genealogy in Luke, which goes all the way back to Adam, it says this in Luke 3:23. It says, Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age, being, as was supposed, the son of Joseph, which was the son of Heli. Now Matthew chapter 1, verse 16 says that Joseph was the son of Jacob, but Luke says he's the son of Heli. And it doesn't seem to make any sense. Well, what was set back with these daughters of Zelophehad is this. If they married somebody else within their tribe, then it would be as if their husband was adopted by Zelophehad and they become the son of Zelophehad. And so what happens is they now take a place in that family tree, and the inheritance, it looks as if, even though they are the son-in-law, they would be legally adopted as the son of that person. And so here you have Mary in Luke, who was the daughter of Heli, who had no sons. So Joseph becomes, like the daughters of Zelophehad, Joseph becomes adopted unto Heli and shows up in the line as being the son of Heli, but actually, physically, he was also the son of Jacob. Well, what's the big deal with that? Well, there's one other little thing. If you go through the genealogy in Matthew, In verse 11, there's a guy named Jechonias that's in Joseph's bloodline. And he was not a very nice guy. In fact, the Lord spoke specifically of this guy because he was bad in Jeremiah 22, verse 28. His name was Jechonias, also called Coniah. And Jeremiah 22, 28 says this, "Is this man, Coniah, a despised, broken idol? Is he a vessel wherein is no pleasure? Wherefore are they cast out, he and his seed, and are cast into a land which they know not? O earth, 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 hear the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, write ye this man childless, a man that shall not prosper in his days, for no man of his seed shall prosper, sitting upon the throne of David, and ruling any more in Judah." And right there, the Lord places a curse, a blood curse, upon the descendants of this guy, Jechonias, and saying, nobody who is a descendant of that man, who is part of his bloodline, is ever going to sit on the throne. Well, when you go through Joseph's genealogy, Joseph runs through Jechonias, which means his son could never be sitting on the throne of Israel. Mary, on the other hand, doesn't go through that bloodline. She goes through a different family. Joseph, if you follow his bloodline, it goes all the way back through Solomon, but it also goes through Jechonias. He's disqualified. Mary, on the other hand, doesn't go through Solomon, but her bloodline goes through David's other son, Nathan, and it skips Jechonias. So even though Joseph is his legal dad in Matthew's genealogy, obviously Jesus' father was not Joseph. Jesus' father was God. He was just his adopted, his legal father. So he had none of Jechonias' blood running through his veins, so he was therefore not disqualified by this blood curse. It's just an interesting aside, but the whole idea that Joseph could be adopted by Mary's dad is laid out back in the daughters of Zelophehad, back in Numbers chapter 27. It's interesting if you follow it up to see the various pieces of it. We'll keep going. A couple more verses. Back in Numbers chapter 27, verse 12, says this, "And the Lord said unto Moses, get thee up into this mount, Abiram, and see the land which I have given unto the children of Israel. And when thou hast seen it, thou also shalt be gathered unto thy people, as Aaron thy brother was gathered." So we get to the end of Moses' life, and the Lord speaks to him and says, I want you to get up on the mountain. You can see the land which you're going to give to the children of Israel, but you're not going in. And when you have seen it, you shall be gathered unto thy people, as Aaron thy brother was gathered. Now, when you look through the first part of Deuteronomy, there's a conversation between Moses and the Lord where he kind of says, Lord, you can do anything. Could you just let me go in and see this wonderful land? Oh God, who can do anything? Please let me in. And the Lord basically tells him, stop talking about it. It's not going to happen. And at the end of Deuteronomy, it speaks of Moses going up into the mountain and the Lord showing him the land. And when you listen to the account, you can see that the Lord is giving him some supernatural vision, because he is seeing the whole land by the tribes, which, you know, he's seeing over 100 plus miles. And not only that, but the way he's seeing it in the order it's given, he's seeing things that haven't happened yet, because he sees Dan up in the north, and Dan doesn't end up in the north at the beginning. He ends up at the end. And the Lord miraculously showing him, I think, some of the history of Israel before he dies. And then after that, it says Moses died. And at the end of Deuteronomy, it's interesting. It says, let me read it to you, what it says about Moses. End of Deuteronomy, chapter 34. It showed him the land. It says in verse 5 of Deuteronomy 34, "So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he buried him in a valley in the land of Moab over against Baal Peor, and no man knoweth of his sepulcher unto this day. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated." 120 years old. He's up there. He sees the promised land. He can't go in because of the way he misrepresented God to the people when he was supposed to speak to the rock to have water come out. We covered that when we went through it. That is a great, you know, I don't know what it's going to say about me when I go. That'd be a cool thing to have said about you. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died. You know, if somebody says, Steve, the servant of the Lord, died, I'd be pretty happy with that. And interesting, it said that he was 120 years old, yet his eye wasn't dim, his natural force wasn't abated. It wasn't like, you know, he did all he could to get it up to the top of the mountain one last time and then keeled from exposure. No, it was his time. It says, well, Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, and it is appointed unto men once to die, but after that the judgment. It is appointed unto men once to die. We all have an appointment at some point with the Lord. Don't know when it is. It may be when we're very old and decrepit. It may be when we're very young and our eye hasn't dimmed and our natural forces haven't abated yet. But everybody has an appointment. You know, and the question, whenever you see something like that, is, are you ready? I mean, Moses was not perfect. It tells us in that section, if we continued on in Deuteronomy 34, there was never anybody like that. And he was ready to meet the Lord. It wasn't like he was afraid of going up there. I mean, even when you look at when Aaron went up and died before that, he went up there with his son and he took the priestly garments off himself and put it on his son and helped arrange him before the Lord took him home. And that's pretty much how I want to go. I don't know. I haven't watched too many people die too closely. You know, I've only been involved with a few people, more after the fact than before. I got to watch my dad pretty closely, although I wasn't there when he died. But, you know, let me encourage you with this. Live in such a way that when you die, they say, you, the servant of the Lord, died. Because we all have an appointment. And certainly, if you don't know the Lord, you are not ready for that appointment. It's funny how your view on death changes when you get saved. Before I knew the Lord, things like, I can't wait to get out of here, were not words that came out of my mouth very often. I don't know about you, but death was a weird thing that I didn't think about a whole lot. Once you know the Lord, and you know who you are, and you know who he is, and you read the Word and you find out what's in store for you and where you're going, it's a whole lot easier to see this place go, to just let it go, because it has a much weaker hold on you. You know, we're just passing through. For those people who think that this is all there is, how miserable an existence is that? But we are not like them. We do not have to fear death. So let me encourage you, if you are someone who does not know the Lord and you don't know when your appointment is, let me encourage you, come up and see me afterwards. I'd be glad to pray with you. And you can start a relationship with a God who will greet you and say, well done, thou good and faithful servant, when he takes you home. If you do know the Lord, and yet you're not really satisfied with the lot you seem to have received in this life, realize the Lord knows what he's doing, and it is up for us not to question him as to why'd you do this, why'd you do that, but it's up to us to accept him and to trust him. Be strong and very courageous is what he's going to say to Joshua over and over again, which just means trust me at what I said and act on it like you really believe it. And so let me encourage you, if you've been stumbling in that area, you know, like the section we went over on Sunday night in 1 John 1:9, if we confess our sins, he's faithful and just to forgive us of our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. A fresh slate is there for anybody who wants it. All you have to do is ask. Let's pray. Lord, you are a good God. You know exactly where you want us to be. Lord, you know the plans you have for us. We don't know the plans you have for us, Lord, but you do. And Father, I pray that you would make us men and women who love your word, who trust your voice, and who are obedient, even when it doesn't seem to make any sense. Lord, and I pray that you would help us to be faithful in doing what you've told us to do until you come. Lord, please bless my brothers and sisters. And Lord, I pray for those that aren't here tonight because they're sick. I know there's a bunch of them. Lord, I pray that you would just sustain them. Heal them, we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Grace and peace, guys.